Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, April 26, 2005, and we're here today to take public testimony on House Bill 5003, which is the budget bill for the Department of Ag, and House Bill 5004, which is a fee bill for the Department of Ag. What I'd like to do first is call forward a panel from the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, and we'll have two panels of three people. So if the first panel could come forward now, that would be great. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Chairman Morgan and committee members. We appreciate being here. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of being able to address the important issue of funding for conservation districts and support you've given us in the past. I'm concerned about the level of funding.
For the record, could you identify yourself?
Yes, I can. I forgot that. I'm Mike Barlow. I'm from Mayer County. I'm a board member from that area. I'm also a member of the association.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, I am concerned about the level of funding for conservation districts at this point in time. Over the past 8 years, we've received no increase in funding, but our workload's increased dramatically. The work in implementing Senate Bill 1010 and assisting in the confined animal feeding operations, plus being technical support for both federal, state, and private programs has increased a great deal. Conservation districts are now not able to fully access the federal programs that are given to us because we lack the staff and the money to do so. Conservation districts are also missing opportunities in helping our constituents in the private areas because we lack the help, the personnel to write private grants and to be able to administer and help them access them. The conservation districts actually in the state of Oregon are quite a ways below funding levels in some other states that I've been able to witness. I won't say we're the lowest by any means, but on the average we're below. We're missing the opportunities there. And there is a balance, I believe, in capital investment, in management, and in technical assistance. And I think our biggest deficit is in the technical assistance area and being able to create the plans, monitor them, and get them on the ground. I think with the increased funding, we have good staff. We have some real dedicated volunteers. We have good people out there. I think we can do the work that the natural resources in Oregon need over a given period of time. But I don't feel a bit hesitant in asking for an increased funding for the Conservation Service, their districts, and the natural resource programs of Oregon. And at this time, because time is limited, I'm going to let the other two talk, but I would encourage you, if there's any time left over, to John McDonald and Van Goodry from NRCS and Tom Bedell will probably have a lot of answers if you have technical questions or specifics.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Chair Morgan and committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify on HB 5003. It's apparent to me that my name is Paul Reed. I'm a director with East Lane Soil and Water Conservation District in Lane County.
Thank you.
It's apparent to me that the existing administration of the state has not a firm understanding of the challenges regarding the implementation of the Agricultural Water Quality Management Act of 1993, otherwise known as Senate Bill 1010. The plans, 39 plans, have all been written and approved, and that may have been a signal that, well, there's nothing else to do. But the reality is that there's a lot to do because that was just step one of a very long process. The remaining steps that need to be taken are the implementation phase of SB 1010 if we're going to comply with the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act. Now, we need resources to be able to do that implementation. Now, who's going to provide those resources? Well, Oregon Department of Agriculture could provide those resources if you added 20 or 30 or 40 staff people to their to their staff. Well, obviously they can't afford to do that because there's not the money to fund that. OSU Extension? Well, OSU Extension has a long history in educating the public, but they've already been gutted by previous budget cuts, so there's not the resources there. Watershed councils? Watershed councils are a fantasy as far as I'm concerned. If you look at the watershed councils, you'll find that they represent only a microcosm of the actual demographic that needs to be dealing with the implementation of Senate Bill 1010. So who's left? Soil and Water Conservation Districts, which I like to term as your best buy in state government, with a volunteer board of directors. We get more bang for the buck than any other group out there. Now, I have provided each of you with a handout of the definition of agricultural uses that came right out of Oregon Administrative Rules regarding the implementation of Senate Bill 1010. The problem is not production ag. Production ag has a pretty good handle on what's going on. They participated in the drawing up of these rules, and they know what it's all about. The real problem is the hobby farmers or the rural residential occupancies, especially in the valley. Down where I come from in Lane County, it's not at all uncommon to see people with 5 acres with 3 or 4 horses or 3 or 4 beeves running around up to their hocks in mud most of the winter time. Those people don't even know that the Senate Bill 1010 applies to them because they've never read the definition, and nobody's ever had the time to go out and tell them about it. So the challenge is how to get the resources to get out there and talk to these people. We have the resources, potential resources, to be able to do that. We don't have the funding to be able to deal with it. Now, I have 2 requests of the committee. One is to restore the funding to the level that has been in the previous biennium and for 2 bienniums before that time. It's a meager amount, but at least it's enough to keep our foot in the door, so to speak, not enough to get the job done. The second request would be to leave some money in the restoration and protection fund, in the operating fund side of the thing, that can be used for non-capital projects. And then create a budget note directing OWEB to set this money aside to be used for funding grant projects that are dedicated to education and outreach and technical assistance for the implementation of the agricultural water quality management area plans. Thank you. Any questions?
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Morgan and members of the committee. My name is Doug Kramer. I am chairman of the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. I'm a farmer out of St. Paul. I'm mainly a blueberry and small seeds operation, but I do farm in 5 different counties in the state. I would also like to voice my disappointment in the $175,000 cut to the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in the state of Oregon. I believe that, as Paul said, they're definitely your best buy on getting conservation projects on the ground, which is exactly what the state of Oregon was looking for when they passed Senate Bill 1010. And so if we want to accomplish the goals of Senate Bill 1010, we need to fund the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to get those projects on the ground. At this point, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts have been assigned the job of doing the work, but it's an unfunded workload that, at this point, we're not able to do because we can't hire the people to write the plans. And without a plan, the landowners don't know what they're doing, don't know what they should be doing, but there's nobody to certify that what they are doing is actually what the state of Oregon is looking for them to do. So we need to have conservation planners funded at these local districts to write plans, monitor the activities, and to certify to the state of Oregon and the federal government that agriculture is meeting their obligations to Senate Bill 1010, the Clean Water Act, and the Endangered Species Act. Just to give you a little bit of history or experience what I have, our Marion Soil and Water Conservation District does have a tax base. So we have a lot better situation than most districts in the state. We do have four planners full-time on staff that are there to write plans for willing landowners. And believe me, we have a full workload for all four of those planners. And because of that, we have been bringing in, well, just last year, through the federal government cost share programs, we brought in $973,000 in cooperative cost share federal money to just our Soil and Water Conservation District. These are the types of monies we could bring in if we have planners to write plans. But if there's no employees to write plans, there's nobody for the landowners to work with, there's no access to the federal dollars, there's no access to any state dollars, and there's certainly no local dollars that are going to be taken advantage of. So in conclusion, I would ask that you restore the $175,000 to our districts and seriously consider allocating some lottery dollars to bring up our ability to implement these plans, Senate Bill 1010, Clean Water Act, and the Endangered Species Act. Thank you.
Comments for the member of the panel, Senator Banks.
Yes. Just could you give me an example of some of the planning is completed. What are some of the projects in your area you'd like to see go forward but you haven't got funding for? What are the kind of things you'd like to see actually happen?
I'm going to tell you what our district is doing. As I said, we're able to write plans. We're able to access federal dollars, so I can tell you what these projects will be. They're water conservation projects by putting more economical, low-volume irrigation out in the fields. It's using lower pressure pumps that save electricity cost. It's wetland reserve programs that take some of your wetlands out of production. They're riparian zones. It funds restoration of your riparian zones along streams and rivers, which does two or three things. It gives shade to the creeks. It also protects the river from runoff from the fields. So those are all programs that can be accessed once we have people in our local districts to write plans for landowners to implement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for taking your time to come and talk to us today. Those were great comments. John, you want to bring the rest of your folks forward?
Chair Morgan and members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to come in after the fog left, and we'll get home in the sunshine, maybe. Anyhow, for the record, I'm Tom Bedell, elected director of the Benton Soil and Water Conservation District and currently chairman of the Oregon Soil and Water Conservation Commission. The commission is a liaison body of seven district directors appointed by the Director of Agriculture who represent the 45 districts in the state to the Department of Agriculture and advise the ODA director on district issues and concerns. When the initial funding amount of $2.4 million per biennium for technical assistance through districts was first being proposed, and I believe it was in the 1999 legislature, funded through the OWEB budget that comes through the district, it was our responsibility, the commission's responsibility, to discuss and develop the formula by which funds were to be allocated. Thus, the commission is vitally interested in the level of state support for conservation work. Now, this allocation has never been increased in 6 years, and in actuality, funding received by the districts is less in the current biennium than in the previous one. I simply wish to point out that districts are very dependent upon all of the funding they receive, and any small amount of either reduction or increase is critical to fulfilling our conservation mission. The proposed reduction of $175,000 per biennium may not sound like much, but the way in which the cut would be allocated amounts to about $2,000 per district per year. We unfortunately cannot pay our employees as adequately as we would like, and $2,000 is about equivalent to 1 month's wages for a conservation technician. Now, especially in districts with small budgets, and there are quite a few out of that 45 with small budgets, this is a significant dent in our ability to do work. So most districts are continually underfunded. Now, the allocation for technical work that we receive for this current biennium is some $3,000 per county, not district, per county, less than the previous year, and combined with this proposed reduction of about $2,000, most districts will be asked to do work far less, do more work far less than we had money for 4 years ago. So restoring the $175,000 will help, but it's still far from adequate. Now, this last one, this paragraph, is we realize that you folks face lots of pressures from all sides, and I personally appreciate the work that you do on the state's behalf. We in districts are trying to work on the state's behalf also. Trying to maintain conservation integrity is our challenge, and further reductions that will amount to about 1 month's time are another loss in our ability to provide the needed services. So we hope and trust that funding could be restored. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. For the record, I am Diane Guidry, representing the United States Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources Conservation Service. I'm here today to provide informational testimony regarding the proposed budget for the Oregon Department of Agriculture and potential reductions in technical assistance to Oregon's landowners. The record levels of conservation funding in the current Farm Bill can only be made available to Oregon's farmers and ranchers if adequate technical staff is available to help develop plans and design and install conservation practices. The expertise of the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, working alongside the limited Natural Resource Conservation Service technical staff, helps fill the technical service needs of Oregon's landowners. Through matching contribution agreements with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, NRCS is able to bring millions in federal conservation dollars to Oregon's private lands. Reductions in the state dollars available to enter into these matching agreements will not only mean fewer funds for the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, but ultimately even greater reductions to the critical conservation work done by Oregon's private landowners. This is because each dollar invested by the state is leveraged with federal funds to provide healthy watersheds, productive landscapes, and viable communities. USDA's investment in each of the past 2 years in conservation in Oregon alone was over $80 million. That's each year. By partnering with local SWCDs and USDA, farmers and ranchers have received both technical and financial assistance to voluntarily address their conservation objectives for the private lands in Oregon. During its 70-year existence, we at NRCS have been proud to work side-by-side with private landowners, the state's agencies, and soil and water conservation districts, and we look forward to continuing this long-standing partnership. Thank you for your time this afternoon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Morgan and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John McDonald. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, Director of the Tualatin Soil Water Conservation District, and a happy recipient of some of these federal funds for technical assistance and financial assistance to improve some things on my own land. What you have in front of you from me is a blue folder. In respect of the time limits that you gave us, Chair Morgan, I'm going to not go through what I would hope to do, but I'll just address what is here. What I gave you is something that, in addition to what you already received at your offices, which was a packet about fact sheets regarding the districts that were in your district, this happens to be a folder with all 45 districts. So if you want to see what's happening here across the state, these are the additional ones, along with a little reminder sheet about the kinds of functions and tasks that we do. Also in the folder is a four-page testimony which obviously I'm not going to conclude in 3 minutes. I think the most important thing for me to say is that we see ourselves as doing a part of the job that was assigned by the state. You know, we're not out there just doing anything we want to do. There's an agriculture water quality program. It was designed as a part of, you know, how do we address Clean Water Act, and there's a number of other acts that addresses I've listed on page one here. We see ourselves as directly assigned through the Department of Agriculture to carry out certain functions to meet the requirements and obligations that the state has assumed. Therefore, in a sense, we're trying to help the state meet its obligations, fulfill the standards, carry out the Oregon plan in that sense. We've been doing planning, and the money that's gone to us has been relatively okay for, doing the work that we do to set up the plans. Those days are over. The plans are now done, and we're into implementation, and the lack of funding in the past is going to get even more critical as we try to implement these things and leave people out there. Page two is an illustration, believe it or not, of a table I put together about what we expect an SB 1010 implementation plan to look like. You notice there's a whole lot of stuff on the top about outreach and information. There's actually a state law that says we have got to go out and inform people. They have to know what these rules are and what the impacts on them, and that's our obligation to do that. Otherwise, they can't be subject to the rules they don't even know exist. The rest of these actions show that they get about $40,000 a year to go toward action of this stuff, and the minimal, and this is very minimal because it's only developed two plans rather than 25, costs about $10,000 to $15,000 more than they're getting. So we're not even getting support for a full-time staff person. On the next page, I talk about the number of workloads in addition to SB 1010. There's the confined animal feeding operations that takes a lot of hours, sometimes 200 hours to do one of those plans. We're really involved in the CREP program, which is taking off like crazy. Tualatin Basin has 25 people waiting for a CREP program plan to be written. We're trying, and we got one planner out there trying to keep up with the workload. Full use of the federal dollars, you've heard. Permits, of course, is eating our lunch in a lot of places. They're taking lots of time and costs to get permits written, and then permits for ourselves to do the work when we choose to do it. We're having a hard time recruiting directors who say, oh, I'd love to join the conservation district. And they come in and we tell them what the job is as a director. And they say, well, maybe not. I think I'll go someplace else. So you don't get paid and you got a lot of work to do and you're accountable and, I'll see you around. I had the misfortune of walking into the Hillsborough office last night and saying, hi, Matt, how you doing? And he said, by the way, here's my letter of resignation. I'm sorry. He has 8 years experience, a master's degree, a certified planner. He's now been hired by King County at about $20,000 higher, plus benefits and opportunities for advancement. He says, I can't pass it up. This is what's happening to our really best people. 8 years experience, a high-quality person, GIS skills all over the place. There's other things that I want to mention, too, that yesterday Rick Jacobson from NORPAC came up and said, certification is getting to be a big thing. Certification means you meet certain standards, and some of those standards happen to be environmental quality and how you're handling natural resources. There's the Food Alliance guidelines for standards. Some of these are water quality, wildlife habitat, and so forth, and soil conditions and handling pesticides and so forth. Guess where they get the technical assistance to be able to get the things done to be able to get certified? So what I would ask is that you put back the $175,000 that was cut, and that you consider, and please don't laugh, that there is a huge need, and I've just given one illustration that would take about $4,300,000 just to add one person per district, and that isn't even enough. Thank you very much.
Questions or comments from the panel, Representative Shelton?
No, I absolutely support your efforts and your soil and water conservation districts. And I think I have a voting record supporting agriculture in the state of Oregon. I'm very sympathetic to you. And the reason I picked Mr. McDonald here is because I met him 2 years ago in water. I don't know the other good folks, although I would like to say something to the U.S. Department of Ag. The federal government could help us out a little more here, too. I speak for all the states, I think. But, Madam Chair, we don't have any money, and revenue's decreased. We're in this position. And with all due respect, I drive down here every day, and I saw the no on 28 and no on 30 signs, and I know taxes are a burden, but you know what? I want people that are coming here asking for money after this state defeated, in my district, 72.2% voted no. And yet everybody wants more money. I was in a PTA meeting with the chair to do with education, and I think half the people in that room voted no on 30, maybe more. Yet everybody wants more money. I mean, the very people that want more money for conservation, salmon habitat, all the good environmental things are the very same people that say, don't build anything and don't log anything. Now, we're stuck here. And you know who's put us here? We put ourselves here. And I don't know if you want to respond to that or not, but I find it increasingly frustrating when this state doesn't lift itself up to help itself, yet comes in here and asks us, these good people, for more money when none exists. So forgive me, Madam Chair, but I...
Well, and Representative Schaffler, I think that you've raised an interesting discussion, but I have two pages of people signed up to testify. So I'm going to just thank you very much for
Chair
your
Morgan,
time.
May I have 30 seconds to respond to Representative Schaffler?
I would be very happy if you would take him out and have a hallway meeting.
Thank you. Actually, I need to run down to see where
I'm Representative Schaffler, see you outside.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll do on deck. We have just been notified that we have a number of people that are waiting to get in here to testify, and they can't fit in the room. So they're in an overflow room right now, or in an overflow area. So what I'm going to do next is to call the people to come testify that have signified that they've driven more than 100 miles to get here. And I'm also going to give the names of the next group of people to testify so that if they're not here, they can hear their names over the closed circuit TV and come in. So I would ask Judge Pryor to come forward. I had asked Nick Furman from the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission to come forward. And I would ask Tammy Denner from the Oregon Wheat Growers League to come forward. These are the people that have signified that they are coming from more than 100 miles away. And then on deck, I will have Ron Paul, Andrew Harris, and Jim Jones. Judge Pryor, it's always a pleasure to have you come and testify before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Laura Pryor. I am a county judge from Gillam County, which is east of the mountains. And for those of you that don't know very much about my county, we're one of the smallest by population in the state. We have 2,000 citizens. And I always say that's about the size of an apartment house down here someplace. We are also an ag-based economy. We don't have any timber. We're one of the three counties in the state that do not have any timber. And we have been a dry land wheat and grains economy since the beginning of the county and of the state. I want to tell you about a great project that I am incredibly proud of and how the Department of Agriculture helped give this project birth. I'll give you a little background as quick as I can. You probably know that most of the wheat grown in Oregon goes into the Pacific Rim. It's soft white wheat. And it has gone into the Pacific Rim ever since we started growing wheat in Oregon. We began to lose our market about 20 years ago, and it really showed up about 10 years ago. And I'm sure that Tammy Denny, who is thoroughly grounded in this from the Wheat Growers League, can give you more information on it. What happened in my county? We're on the Columbia Plateau. And what happened in my county? In 1981, we had 357 growers that were out there actually operating equipment, far more landowners than that. But that's how many fellows we had operating. Today we have 57. We've lost that many since 81. I was approached 5 years ago by three ministers, the Catholic priest, the United Church of Christ minister, and the Baptist minister. And they came and asked me if there was anything that I thought could be done because they were so worried about their congregation. what was happening was these second and third generation wheat farmers were the generation that was risking losing these farms because we lost market share. And they were concerned about their welfare, their mental health, their emotional health of them and their families. Some of them were supporting two, three generations on the farm. So what we did was we decided to try to figure out, if we put a sword in the sand and say, we're not going to go beyond this, is there any reality to that? What can we do? And we began to look at, why did we lose our market to Australia? And what did they do that we are not doing? And basically, they went into the Pacific Rim to the end users, the millers and the bakers, and they said to them, what do you need in our wheat to be able to create your own products, your noodles, your flatbreads, your steam grains? What do you need from us? And they began to develop their wheat to meet that market. The things that their wheat could do for the end user, where the American grower was just still trying to grow to feed the world, as many bushels as we could get out of an acre, which is what happened after the Second World War. We fed the world. But we never changed that. As the world economies began to recover, then they wanted more quality than quantity. When they were starving, they just wanted food. As they began to recover their economies, they had to change, and we didn't really change with that, and not very well at all. Now, how do you create wealth? That's the issue for us in the Columbia Plateau and in rural Oregon, where we've been an ag or natural resource-based economy for so long. How do we get back to creating wealth, which is what we did a long time ago? So we took a look at what Australia did, and we decided, well, my county didn't have enough money to send somebody to Singapore to talk to the millers and bakers about what they needed. But what we could do was look at the domestic market. Pacific Northwest soft white wheat has not been very much in the American market because we were sending it abroad. So we really don't know how this stuff acts in chocolate chip cookies and pie crusts and Boston cream pies. So we have to learn how to do that. In this search to try to figure out what to do, we reached out to the Department of Agriculture. And at the moment we reached out to them, we began to turn the situation around. Their marketing people, working with some of the seafoods folks, began to talk to us about the way to go from the field to the fork. How do you incrementally begin to really do what people talk about all the time, and that is build bottom-up a value-added system so the grower isn't just putting a seed in the ground, harvesting it, selling it to Cargill. Putting a seed in the ground, harvesting it, selling it to Cargill. But getting to Safeway, Costco, Walmart, Sam's Club, Fran's Bread. What the Department of Agriculture did for us was gave us a couple of ideas of companies to go talk to. And we built out of that a relationship and a joint venture, which today the walls are going up on a 50,000 square foot building in my county that will employ 40 people, run three shifts, and begin to ship product clear across this country using the soft white wheat grown in our county and on the Columbia Plateau. I mean, I can't tell you what that means. I mean, I can say that to you, and you can hear it. But to really understand what it means in terms of creating wealth within the county and within this state, we very nearly lost this country across the river into Vancouver. Without the Department of Agriculture's help, trying to help us find little pieces of money, you can get $5 million. I mean, you can go out and you can bond as a jurisdiction. But $5,000, $6,000, to help us do these interim pieces, create a co-op. We had to start from scratch. Little things that made it possible. So we are almost 4 years into this project now. On the strength of what the department was able to do for us, we were able to go to the Department of Economic Development and take advantage of their Special Public Works Program and do bonding, which saved, we could have bonded, but that saved us all that money to put the bond together. So we saved that money. On the strength of that, the Department of Agriculture helped us get a marketing done, a marketing plan done, and a business plan done. EDA, on the strength of that, gave us $900,000 in a grant to build a lab, a wheat lab. On the strength of that, Montana University, State University, gave us some equipment. The wheat quality lab at Pullman gave us some equipment. Things are you get the energy going and things begin to happen. The partner that we have is an Oregon company that was small but exploding. They develop wheat products for Sam's Club, Costco, Walmart, Franz, Safeway, and not just in this region, but now they're so successful, they're beginning to move across the country. The ability for us to put this together, coupled with now the Department of Agriculture coming in and helping us do certification, point of origin certification, segregation and certification of segregation, are all steps that you have to take if you are really going to get involved in not just international trade, because we'll have trade teams coming through, but the domestic market. So the buyers from these huge chains like Sam's Club and Walmart and Costco will come into us.
Judge Pryor, in the interest of time, could I have you summarize?
The summary is this would never have happened if we hadn't had the support and the expertise of Oregon Department of Agriculture. There was no place else to go. And if they hadn't stepped in, we would not have secured this project.
Thank you so much. Mr. Furman.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Nick Furman. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission and the administrator of the Oregon Albacore Commission. The two industry-funded commissions represent in excess of 800 commercial fishing permit holders in Oregon and a part of the Oregon Department of Agriculture's Commodity Commission program. 2 years ago, I had a similar opportunity to come before you and share about my industry's relationship with ODA. I consider it a privilege to come back again to testify on behalf of the agency and their budget and to point out the significant contributions ODA has made to the fishing industry over the past 2 years. The Dungeness crab fishery is the most valuable fishery on the coast. Landings in the current season have broken all production records in the history of the fishery for the entire range from California to Alaska. At present, 31,320,000 some odd crabs worth $42.5 million to the fishermen and in excess of $135 million to coastal communities up and down the coast. I mention this because ODA has played a key role in this success story and in the process saved the crab industry millions of dollars in revenues that would have been potentially lost without their direct involvement, intervention, and leadership. When I last spoke before you, I had told of pending legislation that would allow fishermen and processors to negotiate price face-to-face in a state-supervised format that provided both state and federal protection from antitrust. Staff from the director's office, namely Brent Searle, planted the seeds that initially created that bill and helped to ensure its successful passage. The resulting process has revolutionized the crab industry in Oregon and made it the envy of crab fleets in the neighboring states. And I want to segue from my comments just to say that Representative Krieger was extremely instrumental in seeing that piece of legislation passed, and to your credit and our gratitude. For the past two seasons, the ODA has supervised those important negotiations and helped the industry come to price agreements that have averted costly, acrimonious, and often dangerous strikes. The understanding, tenacity, and leadership exhibited by Deputy Director Dalton Hobbs and Mr. Searle have contributed to positive outcomes 2 years running, and in doing so, helped forge relationships between harvesters and processors that, quite frankly, didn't exist before their involvement. At the start of last season's record-breaking harvest, the industry found itself facing one of its worst fears. High levels of naturally occurring toxin, domoic acid, showed up in crab samples collected along the Oregon coast. Ron McKay, Mike Gogro, and the staff from the Food Safety Division put their heads together with the industry, developed a plan that would ensure public safety and still let the industry operate, and averted a shutdown that would have had disastrous effects on the fishery and its dependents. The results of their quick response, reasonable alternatives, and spirit of cooperation can be measured in real dollars, millions of them, in this valuable resource. Again, at the start of the current season, conditions were poised to derail the price agreement and plunge the industry into chaos. When soft crab problems surfaced in early December, it was the steady guidance, the creative ideas, and the unwavering commitment to the process from Dalton Hobbs and Brent Searle that kept all parties focused on solutions and the fishery on track. The Ag Development and Marketing Division in Portland has been instrumental in generating new market opportunities for the bumper crop of crabs I've taken the liberty to boast about today. Exports to Pacific Rim countries such as South Korea, Taiwan, China are up as a result of their never-ending efforts to find new customers for Oregon agriculture products, including seafood. Closer to home, the division has worked closely with the seafood commissions over the past year to help us maximize the value of our participation in the Banned Oregon program. When a certain group took issue with the state's message, Director Katie Koba herself stepped in to set the record straight. The ODA staff I've had the privilege to work with take their mission seriously. As Commodity Commission Program Manager, Chris Anderson does an excellent job in keeping the 28 commodity commissions in compliance and moving in the right direction. She's worked hard to ensure that SB 854, the bill that recognizes the commission's reorganized the commission program, provides meaningful changes that should protect the integrity of these industry-funded efforts on into the future. We could always count on the Communications Director, Bruce Procarney, to blow the horn and get the word out about agriculture's success stories like the current record-setting crab harvest. In summary, the agency's involvement in my industry has literally put millions of dollars in the pockets of commercial fishermen and on the bottom line of coastal seafood processors. Katie and her staff are obviously committed to enhancing the value of the state's agricultural resources and have earned the respect of my colleagues on the coast. To the seafood industry, the Oregon Department of Agriculture represents money well spent. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Tammy Denny. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Wheat Growers League. Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's my pleasure to present our testimony in support of the Department of Ag's budget. The Oregon Wheat Growers League is a trade association representing Oregon's 4,000-plus wheat and barley producers. The association was established in 1926 by a small group of producers and continues today as a grower-funded, grower-governed entity located in Pendleton, Oregon. The Oregon Wheat Growers League has built a strong tie with the Oregon Department of Agriculture over the past 79 years by working closely with the Department of Ag's administration and staff to ensure the programs within our purview meet the high standards set for Oregon's producers. I'm here today to support the Oregon Department of Ag's budget in general terms. Oregon Department of Ag finds itself in a very difficult position of both regulator and advocate for the commodities grown in Oregon. The funding for the Oregon Department of Ag budget represents less than one-half of 1% of the state's general fund. This is amazing when one considers the depth and breadth of the programs ODA is charged with monitoring and regulating. While Oregon's ag producers desire fewer regulations for the production of their crops, certain expectations exist in today's marketplace to ensure commodities grown in Oregon meet or exceed safe food protocols. These functions are imperative to ensure Oregon's ability to compete in the global marketplace. The Oregon Wheat Growers League supports the Oregon Department of Ag's budget as proposed, with the exception of the $1.4 million funding request for the implementation of the pesticide use reporting system. PERS, in its current form, requires producers to report by township, range, and section. This criterion, which potentially causes producers who are diversifying their crop rotations to other crops besides cereal grains to be easily identified, as their choice of crop protection products may vary from that of cereal producers in the same region. Secondly, cereal producers east of the Cascade Mountain Range tend to own or operate large enough tracts of land that they may easily be identified under a township, range, and section reporting methodology and ultimately targeted in third-party lawsuits or by persons or organizations wishing to do harm to producer operations. The Oregon Wheat Growers League simply cannot allow our producers to become a target of this type of activity. During the creation of pesticide use reporting system, the ag community agreed to allow the administrative rules to be crafted following the creation of the enabling statute. During the crafting of the rules, public hearings were conducted to obtain comments from ag producers and interested citizens. It was the finding of the hearings officer that implementing the program under a watershed reporting structure would be the most fair and equitable methodology. Unfortunately, our previous governor chose to disregard the hearing officer's recommendation and implemented the program with the current township range and section protocols. This resulted in a complete loss of trust between the ag community and the governor's office. Our current governor, however, has made attempts to reach out to the ag community since the beginning of his term in office. In fact, he visited the Reese Ranch in eastern Oregon prior to being sworn in as Oregon's current governor. During that visit, the governor vowed to learn about the importance of Oregon's ag sector to our overall economy. Our current director, Katie Koba, has made it her primary mission to assist the governor and his staff in understanding the nexus between the health of Oregon's ag community and the state's overall budget. A modification of the existing administrative rules governing pesticide use reporting from township range and section to watershed would make this program more favorable to the ag community. However, I'm sure $1.4 million would be a terrific injection into the ailing K-12 and higher ed budgets, given the limited resources available to these programs. Of course, the final decisions regarding the funding issues rest in your hands. The Oregon Wheat Growers League opposes House Bill 2152, which would change the sunset of pesticide use reporting system. The original sunset of 2009 must be maintained, as the ag community spoke in favor of supporting this program under a watershed reporting system, and the environmental community made statements in favor of no program at all as opposed to watershed reporting. The PERS program would have been implemented in a timely manner had the extreme community negotiated in good faith throughout the process. The Oregon Wheat Growers League believes the collection of pesticide application data will assist the state and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in their efforts to ensure crop protection products being used in Oregon do not pose an unreasonable risk to humans or the environment. The continued availability to effective and affordable crop protection products is essential for the production of affordable and bountiful food and fiber. It is imperative that whatever data is collected through PERS be held in the strictest of confidence to avoid potential retaliatory actions of organizations or third-party lawsuits. Producers applying crop protection products at or below the EPA label must be provided third-party indemnity under the law. Today's farmers cannot risk the loss of their entire operation due to frivolous lawsuits filed by persons or organizations that simply have forgotten where their food comes from, the farm. Thank you very much for allowing me to appear before you today, and I would be glad to entertain any questions.
Thank you very much. Senator Bates.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I reiterate what I heard just now. It's important to me as a physician. I have some experience of lawsuits from what my fellow physicians have gone through, so you have some sympathy here. But watershed reporting for PERS is something that, from your point of view, is acceptable then?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, yes, watershed would be... That would be our preferred method if we have to accept pesticide use reporting in the state at this time.
Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Krieger.
Where's the crab?
You know, I was sitting back in this room thinking, boy, did I miss a marketing opportunity, because if I had been...
You could have handed out samples.
I usually do to the Board of Ed, but where's Rick Costa? All right. You told him, didn't you? But next time.
Thank you very much for
taking
your
much.
Time to come speak with us today. Call forward Ron Paul, Andrew Harris, and Jim Jones, and on deck is Bernie Faber, John McCauley, and Mark Sitzma.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ron Paul, President of the Historic Portland Public Market Foundation, leading the effort in Portland to create a full-time, year-round public market that connects with Portland's long history from the 1860s of leading not only Oregon but North America in the quantity and quality of their public markets. It's also a pleasure to follow Judge Pryor. I'm speaking from the point of view of the largest county, not the smallest, but also in support of the Department of Agriculture's role in helping farmers markets and now the proposed public market bridge the urban-rural divide and to incent local direct farm marketing. Portland has currently about 16 neighborhood and central city farmers markets that are involved in an estimated several million dollars worth of commerce for local of local products direct marketed from the producers. The public market has just completed the first part of a feasibility study with the support of the ODA, the USDA, and the Portland Development Commission. The estimated sales of local products, fresh and value-added, is approaching $20 million a year when the market would open in approximately 2009. As we look at the support that ODA has offered, it's clear that the potential for wealth creation within the ag sector is really predicated not only, as Judge Pryor said, on the value-added, but going truly from farm to fork and having direct access to consumers. The public market, as an extension of the success of the local farmers market, has really received the support that the ODA has been able to leverage. The USDA has paid close attention to our efforts in Portland, in part because of Katie Coba and Dalton Hobbs' efforts on our behalf. I would just like to add that the value of Oregon agriculture to the urban community is often lost, as we spend a lot of time in talking about issues that pertain to rural Oregon and the agricultural issues they face. The Multnomah County Food Policy Council, among other city policy and county policy agencies, are paying increased attention to the role of local agriculture, not only in the economy of the region, but in the health of its inhabitants. And you should take great pleasure in knowing that the ODA has taken a significant leadership role in helping to further that vision. Thanks.
Mr. Harris.
Chairman Morgan and members of the committee, I'm Andrew Harris, a Salem physician. In 1998, I served on the governor's task force on hazardous substances and toxics right to know. The recommendations of this task force were used to draft the pesticide use reporting bill of 1999. Today, the citizens of Oregon are as vulnerable to the toxic effects of pesticides as they were 6 years ago. Physicians have moved more and more in the direction of preventive medicine, advocating a healthy diet, exercise, and avoidance of unhealthy habits and toxic substances. The preventive medicine model presupposes that doctors and patients are able to track their exposure to agents that can trigger medical problems. Pesticides are toxic chemicals precisely because they are designed to kill living things. Many are toxic to the human endocrine, immune, and nervous systems, especially during sensitive stages of development of the fetus and of young children. Learning disorders, childhood cancer, asthma, sterility, and Parkinson's disease are among the disorders that have been linked to pesticide exposure. Studies have shown that small single doses of organophosphates, such as Durspan and diazinon on a critical day of development, can cause permanent changes in neurotransmitter receptor levels in the brain. Organophosphates decrease DNA synthesis in the developing brain, resulting in deficits in cell numbers and function. This can lead to hyperactivity, developmental delays, behavioral disorders, and decreased coordination. Pesticide use reporting is about having necessary information and good science on which to base medical decisions. Pesticide use reporting gives medical professionals and the public the information needed to determine pesticide exposure. It is long overdue. Thank you for supporting the health of Oregonians with full funding and implementation of the pesticide use reporting.
Thank you very much. Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jim Jones, and I'm here representing Oregon Petroleum Association as well as my own company, Jones Oil Company, that's been in business for some 60 years here in the city of Salem. We want to see the continued funding of the Department of Agriculture along with the State Weights and Measures Division. We found that we've had a close working relationship with their organizations over the past several years, and we're here to represent all the other marketers within the state that support the agricultural business. It's obviously a great economic base for our state, and I think it's a gem that we need to continue to support, and with that, I'll end my conversation and be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. I will call next Bernie Faber, John McCulley, and Mark Sitzna, and on deck is Laura Weiss, Jessica Hamilton, and May Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Morgan and committee. My name is Bernie Faber. My sons and I are in the dairy business outside of Salem here, and I'm currently chair of the State Ag Board. And I like to come here and talk about supporting the Ag Budget, House Bill 5003. I have several things that I think are extremely important in the funding of the Ag Department budget, and the first one on my list is food safety. As a dairy farmer, I'm more aware of the food safety issue, of how important it is. One of the things that I feel is the responsibility of producers, processors, retailers, and also consumers to make sure that the food is safe. And from that standpoint, I think that proper funding of that entity is utmost importance. One of the things with the Food Safety Division is inspections of dairies, and without proper inspections, we cannot interstate ship milk. This is mandatory laws. Some of the things that we look at is we have not seen any increase of fees since 1987, and we understand that. We also understand the fact that the Department of Ag and its administration have done a splendid job in managing the money that you have given them. And I think from that standpoint, sometimes we get basically to a point where we're not rewarded for a conservancy that they have done. So I think they can be commended for that. The other one is the Livestock and Health Identification Program, and it is totally necessary that we have ability to track animals and do the things that are really necessary to make sure that in case of a real outbreak, a problem in a disease or so forth, and BSE, I think, is a perfect example of that. You know, being on the State Ag Board and being an animal producer, I realize really the importance of all of us working together. You know, on I think it was Christmas Eve, I got a phone call saying that we have this problem. And I went into the department, and they kidded me after a few days of this that they thought they ought to give me a desk and a room to stay. But, you know, I think from the standpoint of how we work together, industry and the Department of Ag, it is to be commendable that, first of all, we didn't really have a BSE cow in the state, but its ability to work with, you know, I've sat in on several conference calls with USDA, and they were doing this several times a day to track the meat and that sort of thing. And I think from that standpoint, to bring us all into perspective of the importance of us all working together is commendable. The other thing is the natural resources program that I've been heavily involved in since basically the legislature here in the 1980s put together the first regulations on the animal, particularly CAFOs or confined animal operations. And from that time we responded to a point where it was just a complaint-driven system to a point now where we're working with USDA and everything to make sure that we're all into compliance. You know, on a personal side of this, you know, we used to think that this was the most terrible thing that ever could have happened to us. But as we learned to manage this system or these systems, we're able to find out that in my case, rather than spending $20,000 a year for commercial fertilizer, we spend practically nothing because we're able to store ply at the present time. You know, along with being able to in the state, and I've been honored that basically I was chosen to be the first methane digester in the state. And the positive things that are happening to that, you know, we now have one operating in Tillamook. We have one in McMinnville that's under construction. And we have another one here right outside of Salem that is going to be it's going to be another one that's going to be built. And the reason for all of this us working together is the fact that when we do this, we came up with some technology and some information out of these systems that the Department of Ag was willing to work with us on, and we really appreciate that. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Also, thank you for your service to Oregon on the Board of Ag. That is very much appreciated. Mr. McCulley.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm here today representing a number of different groups. I represent the tree fruit industry, agriculture cooperatives, the Oregon Fairs Association, and I also work as administrator with three different commodity commissions that are overseen by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Clover, Orchard, Grass Seed, and Processed Vegetable Commission. And my message is going to be brief, but I just wanted to let the committee know how good my experiences have been in dealing with the Department of Agriculture in a wide variety of issues. I think the key to me in that positive relationship has been their willingness to seek solutions to problems. They play a dual role in this state. They are regulators and they are advocates, and I think that sometimes makes it difficult for them. But they are always looking for solutions to problems, and we've had some big ones in some of the industries that I work with. I do want to speak specifically in support of their policy option package on certification. Especially the cooperatives and the tree fruit industry that I represent are interested in that. We have to find a way to differentiate ourselves in the market. We know, as you heard yesterday from Mr. Jacobson from NORPAC, we are a high-cost producing area. We have to find ways to make ourselves unique in the marketplace, and I think certification is one of the programs that does that. So with that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I just want to be here to support the department's budget and offer appreciation for the good work they do.
Thank you, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. My name is Mark Setzma. I'm an associate professor at Portland State University, and for the past 2 years I chaired the Oregon Invasive Species Council. And today I'm here representing the council. I'd like to echo the comments heard previously in terms of commending the Department of Ag on their work, particularly on invasive species. ODA provides administrative support to the council, and the Oregon Department of Ag was really responsible for sort of advancing the legislation that established the council back in 2001. I think that the ODA noxious weed and plant pest control programs are really critical to preventing new invasive species introductions into the state. I know several of the members of the committee are familiar with invasive species issues, so hopefully I don't have to go into that. I have provided you, though, a list of, just in 2004, some actions the ODA has taken to prevent establishment of invasive species in the state, and I provide that basically to show you that it's an ongoing battle. It's a constant surveillance and response to these pest problems. And I think ODA does really a commendable job in protecting the state from these issues. It's both a natural resource and an economic issue in the state. I really hope that, I hesitate to say this, but additional funds could be found for invasive species work. And I guess I would just add to that I think it's inevitable because these species are moved along with trade and goods. And the more we do of that, we all want to do more trade and sell more stuff overseas. And just the inevitable consequence of that trade in and of itself is more species being introduced. So eventually we'll have to deal with it in some way. It's just inevitable. And with that, I'll stop and answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And what I'd like to do now is call forward Laura Weiss, Jessica Hamilton, and Mae Thompson. And on deck is Rhett Lawrence, Terry Witt, and Katie Faust. Please begin.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Jessica Hamilton. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. And before I jump into anything substantive, I did want to acknowledge Madam Chair and Representative Schaffler that I was pleased that you take your frustrations out on somebody else besides me every once in a while.
Wait a minute, Madam Chair. My characters are being impugned. I've been more than fair to everyone in this building.
Indeed, yes. We have those frequently. Thank you. The Oregon League of Conservation Voters is a part of a broader coalition called the Oregon Conservation Network, and that consists of approximately 70 different groups across the state. And the Oregon Conservation Network, prior to this legislative session, came up with a list of priorities, and we're referring to that as our common agenda. And funding for pesticide use reporting is on that common agenda. And so I just wanted to lend the support of approximately 70 organizations, I can't name them obviously right now, nor do I know the names of all of them, to supporting full funding for this program. And so Laura Weiss is with Oregon Environmental Council, and then Rhett will be speaking on behalf of OSPIRG, and those are two members of that coalition that are working really strongly on this. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Weiss. I'm the program director at the Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'm here today to yet again express Oregon Environmental Council's support for fully funding and implementing Oregon's pesticide use reporting system. Today what I'd like to do is clarify why pesticide use reporting is so important to so many people in Oregon. Just a couple of months ago, the Senate Environment Committee heard from drinking water providers, health experts, local governments, children's health advocates, religious organizations, and fishing groups about why they need pesticide use information. So the question is, why are all of these groups and all of these people so keen on collecting data on pesticide use? Well, there are over 9,000 pesticide products registered for use in the state of Oregon. What I'd like to do today is consider just one commonly used pesticide. It's a pesticide called 2,4-D. According to the manufacturer of 2,4-D, it's the most widely used herbicide in the world. The U.S. EPA estimates that 58 million pounds of 2,4-D are used in the U.S. each year. It's widely used in many settings. It's registered for use on lawns, roadsides, rights-of-way, golf courses, and for forestry, aquatic weed control, weed control on rangeland, wheat, corn, grass seeds, and several other crops. So it's widely used in many settings. 2,4-D has been the subject of many health-related studies, and the findings cause some concern. For example, a Minnesota study of private pesticide applicators associated 2,4-D use with adverse effects on reproduction. The study found that the birth defect rate was higher in children of those who applied 2,4-D as compared to the general population. A National Cancer Institute study found that dogs with a specific type of cancer were more likely to live in households where the owners applied 2,4-D to their lawns or employed lawn care companies to treat their yard for weeds. A study of golf course superintendents who often apply herbicides found that their death rate from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a deadly cancer, was about twice the rate of the general population. Meanwhile, other studies show that 2,4-D can negatively affect wildlife and livestock. It's been shown to be highly toxic to honeybees. And in fact, here in Oregon, experts are now trying to understand the cause of bee deaths, and pesticide exposure is one of the possible causes that they're looking at. 2,4-D has been shown to be toxic to horses. In one case, a county weed control program in Utah sprayed 2,4-D with other herbicides on thistles in a corral and a nearby creek, and 3 horses died and 16 were injured. These are just some examples. We're finding 2,4-D in many places. The U.S. Geological Survey found 2,4-D in 19 out of 20 river basins that they sampled across the U.S. Here in Oregon, the USGS found that 20% of the samples in the Willamette River Basin had 2,4-D, and 30% of the samples in the Clackamas River. 2,4-D is one of the pesticides that's subject to a new buffer zone requirement to protect threatened or endangered fish species. The rule requires pesticide applicators to avoid spraying certain pesticides within a certain distance of the listed streams or rivers. And in fact, attached to my testimony is one of the maps that ODA has made available on their website to help pesticide applicators comply with these mandated buffer zones. And I thought a visual might be useful so you can see where the rivers and streams are running in a particular county. So what does all this have to do with pesticide use reporting? Well, if we want to understand how 2,4-D gets into our waterways, or how its use might impact our health, or whether bee deaths or sick horses might be due to its use, we need data on the use of this chemical. Without pesticide use data, we simply cannot answer any of these important questions. And if we consider all of its many registered uses, we can quickly see that in any one geographic area, in any particular time frame, 2,4-D could be used in multiple settings simultaneously. If the chemical shows up in the Tualatin River, for example, how do we know where it might be coming from? Knowing the patterns of use will help explain how this and hundreds of other pesticides used every day in Oregon reach our waterways. Furthermore, tracking pesticide use will help researchers institute more effective monitoring programs and identify surface and groundwater supplies at greatest risk of contamination. The data also allows distinctions to be made between runoff from urban areas as compared to agricultural areas. And in some situations, scientists are finding that runoff is greater in the urban areas. In California, where pesticide use reporting has been a fact of life for about 15 years, the use data has proven useful in a multitude of areas. One example, California regulators use site-specific data to target their efforts to protect endangered species. The availability of detailed pesticide use data allowed them to focus their protection efforts where they were needed and therefore reduce administrative costs and economic impact on users. Understanding more about the health risks associated with pesticide exposure is another important use for pesticide use data. Research scientists from OHSU support full implementation of PERS so they can evaluate exposures to workers and the public, study health-related research questions such as cancer and learning disabilities in children, conduct health risk assessments, and develop ways to reduce unnecessary exposures. So in closing, I hope I've given you some sense of the health and environmental risks we face from pesticides and how pesticide use reporting provides a non-regulatory approach to risk reduction. Collecting pesticide use data will encourage sound science and discourage exaggerations, and all of this for a very reasonable cost. The program represents less than 0.2% of ODA's entire budget. Thank you for your time and attention to this important issue.
Ms. Thompson.
Chair Morgan and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I support the full implementation of the pesticide use reporting system. I am Mae Thompson, a nurse and a member of the Oregon Nurses Association. My academic and research interests concern maternal child health and underserved populations and community and environmental health policy. I'm also a mom. The last time I testified regarding this issue, Representative Anitra Rasmussen held my then 9-month-old son while I read my testimony. I'm at 6 now. He's in kindergarten today. And I'm still very interested in seeing this program move forward. Many scientists in the state of Oregon, and I won't read the laundry list, I think you've heard it, have a real need for PERS data. The system will provide the accurate data necessary to examine the risks of using specific pesticide products in both rural and urban areas of Oregon. Pesticides are, as a class, are unique in that they're the only toxins that are deliberately applied that we deliberately apply to the environment. Yet we have very little information about such basic questions as how many people are exposed to which chemicals, from what sources, how often and at what dose, who is exposed, workers, children and their family, neighbors, who's out there. Most pesticides have not been tested for their long-term effects on human health. Health problems that have been linked to chronic pesticide exposure at low doses include miscarriage, breast cancer, birth defects such as hypospadias, childhood cancer such as acute lymphoblastic leukemia, gliomas and soft tissue sarcomas, endocrine problems including infertility and immune dysfunction. Specific information provided by the PERS will allow us to test hypotheses about exposure and health problems. For instance, with PERS precise data about timing and location, we can provide information we already have, such as birth certificate data from the Department of Vital Statistics, to test any level of correlation and factors in timing to birth defects like hypospadias. I strongly support the full funding and implementation of PERS, which will improve our knowledge about the pesticide health link, if any, and guide the creation of rational safety standards. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much to the panel, and I'll call forward Rhett Lawrence, Terry Witt, and Katie Fast, and on deck is Marcia Keith, Ken Yates, and Randy Tucker. Mr. Lawrence, please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm an environmental advocate with OSPIRG, Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. Here today, essentially to echo the sentiments of a number of people who have spoken ahead of me and to encourage full funding of the pesticide use reporting system in House Bill 5003. OSPIRG was a founding member of the Oregon Pesticide Education Network, which played a role in passing the pesticide use reporting law in 1999. But as you know, essentially from the get-go, the program has been in jeopardy because of a lack of funding. And so 6 years later, we still have very little information about how pesticides are being used in our state, where they're being used, and in what amount. So you've heard a number of the reasons already why we need to have specific information about pesticides being used in our state for safe drinking water purposes, public health impacts on salmon, just the simple right for citizens and community members to know what pesticides are being used in their parks and schools. Basically, I just would encourage this committee to support full funding for the pesticide use reporting system and House Bill 5003, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Mr. Witt, please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'm also the father of two sons, 133, 129. They are both healthy, both have extremely high IQs, and I've used 2,4-D on my lawns in my entire life. 2,4-D has a water standard. It is okay to have 2,4-D in your drinking water. We're not saying that people should go out and drink it, but like anything else, dose makes the poison. I'm here today in broad support of the Department of Agriculture's budget. We work very, very closely with the department in a variety of ways, namely dealing with the pesticide control program, the fertilizer control program, agricultural water quality, which is typically called Senate Bill 1010, and also protection of the state's natural resource base from insect, disease, and invasive weeds. ODA, in my estimation, does more with less than any other agency that I know of. Their budgets are very pared down. It seems like whenever there's a resource shortage, the Department of Ag takes a disproportionate hit compared to many of the other agencies. We have particular concerns today on what I believe to be questionable appropriation priorities within the governor's recommended budget, namely the elimination of the pest prevention program and to the $2.35 million of money that's allocated under Decision Package 303 for PERS and a new urban pesticide education program. Why do I believe this is a questionable use of limited funds? If you look at the $2.35 million decision package in 303, that's $440,000 more than the entire base pesticide program budget for a year. That's their base program budget for all of their pesticide activities is $1.9 million per year. And we're asking to basically spend more than that on a questionably supported program. And I just need to remind the members of the committee what the pesticide-based program does. It provides all of the user training and licensing, all of the certification, all of the product registration in the state, some 9,500 to 10,000 registrations per year. It does all of the compliance monitoring, does all the investigation and all the enforcement of the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act at the state level. It is our last line of defense for our citizens with regard to proper pesticide use. They only have 5 field investigators to cover the entire state, and I think that is woefully inadequate to do a job. They do a tremendous job with the resources they have, but they sure could use more. I think for those that are concerned about the safety of our citizens, particularly as it pertains to exposure to pesticides, I would say that fully funding our base pesticide program is a much higher priority than to create new programs to collect questionable data. The current program, the current base pesticide program, receives zero general fund dollars. It hasn't received any general fund dollars, it's my understanding, for at least 20-some years. Currently, 76% of that base pesticide program is covered by fees paid on registration of pesticides and licenses. The other 24% is paid for by US EPA and USDA grants. So it is entirely other funded. Unfortunately, this year in 2005, the EPA grant money to the base pesticide program is going to be cut by about $100,000. That's going to put a dent, and by the year 2007, the base pesticide program will be in a deficit position. We think that if there is any additional funds left over that don't have to be allocated to programs like school and senior health, that we ought to be looking at putting that $1.4 million of general fund into programs that really will have a marked increase on the safety of our people, like food safety and the base pesticide program. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan and members of the committee. For the record, Katie Sass with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I'd like to start out by saying this past biennium, the Department of Agriculture staff dealt with 2 major disease issues. The BSE outbreak, the cow that stole Christmas, and it really did. Not only did it ruin Christmas for the livestock industry, but the department staff spent their holiday answering media questions, dealing with the recall of meat at local supermarkets, and then also following up with tracking of potential exposure animals that could have been in the state of Oregon as well. Along with that, they also dealt with the sudden oak death disease and outbreaks that we had. Their work prevented a quarantine for the state of Oregon. And so through these 2 diseases, which could have had major impacts to the state of Oregon, to their 2 largest segments, our markets were not interrupted and our prices remained strong. With that, the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation is in general support of the department's budget. However, we have concerns with a few programs and cannot support their budget in its entirety. And I will highlight a few of the programs that we have some emphasis on. The first one is we oppose the elimination of the pest prevention program. We've had a mild winter this year, as throughout the
throughout the state, and we're concerned about increases in invasive pests and insects. And this program will put the department at a disadvantage in battling that, and therefore it puts agriculture at a disadvantage. We are opposed to the reduction for the SWCD funding, and I think you've heard enough about that program and the importance of it. I will add, while SWCDs are being asked to do more each year, many times those requests come from the legislature. If general funds are not available, we would support finding funding from other sources such as OWEB or others. We'd like to add support in the governor's budget to the predator control funding through Wildlife Services. That is a cost share program with USDA monies from ODFW, county funding, and private sectors as well. This is a successful program that assists livestock producers, but I think more we're seeing that their work's being done for health and human services or safety work, such as with the cougar population issue that we're facing, and also increased nuisance animals in urban and rural areas. Farm Bureau supports Option Package 202, the food animal tracking system. Nationally, we are going to be seeing a livestock identification program. Farm Bureau is in support of that program, but it's also important that we have a strong system here in the state to assist in its implementation and its development. Currently, the department is working with other states on a pilot project, and I think that is going to be a successful piece for them to build off and assist USDA in the national systems development. We are supportive of the bioterrorism coordinator. That's option action 205. Bioterrorism is something that this changing world is making us face. And the impact of that could be ruining our markets. I'll just say that it's important. We support option action 301. Sudden oak death positions being permanently funded. And finally, we oppose option package 303. Farm Bureau cannot support a pesticide use reporting package until the reporting is done by Watershed. I think you've heard some of the basis of why the agriculture community feels that way today. And I'll finish by saying this session, this committee and others are going to have to make some difficult choices on funding, and priorities need to be in the best places. And for agriculture, we are not seeing the benefit coming from that program when you put it at what we're seeing being cut to fund it. And that includes our extension service programs, our research programs, and some of the other programs in the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Call forward Marcia Keith, Ken Yates, and Randy Tucker. On deck is Dennis Hayes, Bob Schaefer, and Les Bergstein. Ms. Keith, please begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marcia Keith. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, and we were motivated to speak in front of the committee today because this gives us a chance to do something that we don't often do, which is to acknowledge good work and to say thank you to an agency. We work closely with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, particularly the Animal Health Division, and even more particularly the Oregon State Veterinarian. And I'm here today to just make a very brief statement in support of the good work that
that division and department and the state veterinarian do, and the kind of cooperation and collegiality that we experience from the department, and to say job well done, and hope you support the budget bill to the extent that you can find it in your hearts to do so.
So much. Mr. Yates.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ken Yates. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for the Northwest Food Processors Association. The Northwest Food Processors Association supports House Bill 2539, fee structure bill, and the $5 million request for general funds for the Food Safety Inspection Division for the 2005-2007 biennium. Let me make some points in support of that. I will be brief. In these troubled times, food safety is threatened not only from accidental contamination, but also intentional adulteration threats. A full, competent, and fully funded program ready to act in times of crisis is essential to maintain public safety. The association and its members are unwilling to jeopardize food safety and security provided by Oregon's excellent food safety inspection program due to inadequate or uncertain funding. Oregon food manufacturers recognize the immense value of the state food safety program for the contributions its inspectors make as an additional set of professional eyes looking after the safety and sanitation of the food supply in this state. This industry considers the state of Oregon and FDA essential partners in the high priority of assuring consumers that the food supply is wholesome and secure. This joint obligation and partnership has been a compact between consumers, the state, and federal governments, and the industry for over 100 years now. The association has opposed the shift in general fund dollars out of the Food Safety Inspection Program. The industry's position has and continues to be food safety is an essential government health and safety program and obligation. Why is this desirable? I think a wholly fee-for-service system, which essentially is what we have now since the program is about 95% fee-driven at this time, so very little public support. What we have now essentially is a hidden and regressive sales tax that gets passed on to consumers. Further, a fee-for-service system puts the regulated community in the position of customer. Oregon's Food Safety Inspection Program should not potentially be compromised in this manner. A shift towards restoration of public support for this program enhances the stability of the food safety program and the respect for it by Oregon citizens. This is a fair and practical plan in terms of the fee structure. I'm not talking through my hat here asking for $5 million in public funds. This industry is ponying up under House Bill 2539. Each gross annual sales fee category is associated with an average level of inspection hours provided to food establishments in that category. Funds associated with FDA contracted inspections, federal funds that come to the state, are backed out and accounted for. So industry categories that are covered by FDA contracted inspections are not charged twice under this fee proposal. Finally, the package takes into account time resources expended by the department in carrying out inspections. This approach also accounts for the professional food quality staff that many of our food processing plants employ. And so inspections are much shorter than institutions or companies that do not have a professional staff on hand. So all of these factors have been taken into account in House Bill 2539. We support it enthusiastically. And in conclusion, the association wants to compliment the director and her extremely competent food safety inspection staff for their effective and efficient management of ever-shrinking resources. I want to assure you that the food industry is doing its part to promote and pay for additional fees, and we're going to hold up our end, and we do request that the state return and restore return to a position and restore funding from general fund sources so we can have a program that is both funded and effective and has integrity. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area, And as I recently learned, the only local government in the state with a AAA rating from bond rating from Standard & Poor's. So I'm proud of that.
I have some money.
Beg your pardon? it lets us borrow money. thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I'll also be brief. My purpose in testifying is to express support for the inclusion in the ODA budget of funding to implement the pesticide use reporting system. Metro has two particular reasons that we care about this, and they're focused on the urban on urban pesticide use large by and large. The first is that we have a great deal of responsibility for water quality and wildlife habitat within the urban region that we serve. And in fact, we're engaged right now in the development of a program called Nature in the Neighborhoods, which is a non-regulatory effort to protect, again, water quality and wildlife habitat inside the urban growth boundary. And we're focusing on incentives and acquisition and technical assistance and education and other kinds of non-regulatory approaches. However, in targeting those efforts, it would be very helpful to have information on urban pesticide use. And since 1999, I believe, which is the year the law originally passed, the Metro Council has been on the record in support of the program, primarily with the goal of obtaining urban data. The second reason that the Council supports funding for the program is that, as you probably know, as you may know, Metro is responsible for the solid waste collection system for the Portland metropolitan area, including the operation of two solid waste transfer stations. And I learned this only this session. Pesticide waste is the most expensive waste that we manage. And while many of the hazardous materials that we collect can either be burned or reused for reused or burned for energy recovery, pesticides can't be. There aren't any low-cost disposal methods for these wastes that we receive. So having some data from the waste shed that we serve would be very helpful in managing and reducing the waste that we have to manage, and thereby reducing the cost of our solid waste system. So those are the reasons that we care about it, and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Tucker, with the bonding capacity that you have in Metro, has there been any discussion, because you feel this program is so important, about Metro instituting a program themselves?
Not that I know of, but I'd be happy to go back and ask and see if we, see if we have in fact considered something like that. We definitely are, do pesticide education for citizens, within the region, and have a lot of programs that are aimed at, reducing unnecessary pesticide use. Again, all just voluntary programs and non-regulatory efforts.
Very much.
Sure.
Call forward Dennis Hayes, Bob Schaefer, and Les Bergstein. On deck is Robert. Okay, what's that one? Richard Kosasan and Dave Nelson. And Mark Simmons has got his finger in here, so we'll put him on the list.
Which list is that?
Yes. Please proceed.
My name is Dennis Hayes. I'm here representing the Oregon Feed and Grain Association in support of the feeds budget of the Animal Identification and Health Division's budget, and also to support the Food Safety Division. As you know, the members of the feed industry in Oregon pay fees to be inspected by the department. We produce about a wide variety of products here, and some come from outside of the state. We're very pleased with the sampling that is done by the ODA, making sure that animal feed products conform to the regulations. Excuse my voice. I'm fighting a cold. The feed inspectors visit our members' plants on a timely basis, at least once a year, sometimes more than that to the big, large manufacturers. They have not found any violations that would impact food safety or safety to humans. They have found labeling violations, which may affect animals' performance, such as weight gain, meat production, or milk production. These violations are published in the ODA's website to inform the general public that these have happened. The ODA works with our members to correct these labeling violations. Testing methods do vary from lab to lab, and sometimes things are not as consistent as one would think. And products coming from outside the area can vary, and so by the time they're in the final product, there may be discrepancies. We have a feed advisory committee that works with the ODA on these issues, and we'll continue to work with them. And currently we have plans to review the problems with some of these violations. We support the funding for that program. As you know, most of it is funded by permit fees and everything else. On another level, I work with the meat industry. I'm the executive director of the Northwest Meat Processors Association. Our members also pay fees to be inspected by the Food Safety Division. The problem there is there's not enough funding to inspect them properly. Some of them don't see an inspector often enough. And we would reiterate what the Northwest Food Processors Association has said related to adding general fund money to protect the safety of the food supply in this area. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Schaefer. I come to you today representing the Pacific Northwest Christmas Tree Association and Noble Mountain Tree Farm. As you may be aware, we're the largest Christmas tree producing state in the nation, producing over 8 million trees and bringing a little over an estimated $120 million into the state. The ODA is a very highly respected agency by the Christmas tree industry for the job they do. We first developed a relationship with them back in 1986, I believe it was, when a licensing program was developed because of a problem that had arisen with some pest problems, and their credibility in industry allowed us to ship that year, and without their support, we would have been in a real world of hurt. The thing that they provide that we like to stress is that the pest and identification of diseases and the management of that information to our industry is very important, because it allows us very easily to ship our products nationally and internationally. They alert growers to inspection and quarantine policies of other states and countries on an ongoing basis, so we as growers can plan accordingly to be able to ship. They have a very high-quality staff who respond immediately to growers' requests for information. They are extremely accommodating, and because of this, they have a very high degree of support from growers, which is not normally the case with a lot of state agencies. The agency has had a very high degree of success working with agriculture. Supporting the Oregon Department of Agriculture and its budget is very important to agriculture, and that's a very important, obviously, to Oregon's economy. We believe that they need consistent funding on an ongoing basis to provide agriculture with service from highly qualified staff that has credibility with national and international markets. With credibility, credibility comes from stability. Just on a side note, we cannot support funding of PERS at the expense of lowering funding for currently funded priorities. And that's the extent of my...
Thank you so much. Mr. Bergstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Len Bergstein, and I'm here representing Three Mile Canyon Farms, a sustainable farm operating on 93,000 acres in Morrow and Gillam counties. I'm pleased to appear today in general support of the Department of Agriculture's budget for three reasons. First, we appreciate the department's role as a reliable, responsible regulator. For example, the department has designed and implemented tough but fair CAFO permits for our farm to assure the protection of the water quality in Morrow County. Second, we like the way the department plays a leadership role as an aggressive advocate for public safety and the public interest. To take one incident, which was mentioned before, when BSE scare came to Oregon, the department took a lead to organize a rapid response. In short order, over 17,000 cows were fully tested, and the public was assured that there was no threat in Oregon. Lastly, we appreciate the department's as an innovative partner for Oregon's branded products, assuring that the traditional and organic products we grow, and we grow organic products on about 2,500 acres at our farm, help Oregon agriculture live up to its full potential as a driver for Oregon's economy. I'm pleased to be here supporting the department's budget and be glad to answer any questions.
Call forward now Robert Reynolds, Richard Kosasen, and Dave Nelson. And on deck is Mark Simmons and Rick Gustafson. Please proceed.
Okay. I'm Bob Reynolds. I'm the president of the Mall River Improvement District. It's a taxing authority, and we're also a volunteer organization. We represent the River Association. We started back in 1937-38, before the Corps of Engineers came into effect, and we took over after they no longer had any funding. Our first purpose had been for erosion and protection of property, but in the last few years has been for the protection of clean water. We do have a canby that has water, takes water from the river. We're in support of the pesticide bill. The fact is that with pesticides and herbicides, to understand what's in the water, it takes a specific testing for each type of chemical. You need to know where it's coming from. And that goes to another principle, which I understand is a problem here, is the fact is that if you do the reporting, if you do it on the watershed, it will not do us any good, because we need to be able to know where the chemicals are coming in and be able to make the test. Tests are relatively expensive. We know what chemical it is, where they're coming in at. If we have to do a general testing, from our point of view, it's very prohibitive. What our goal is, of course, they have salmon in the river, and salmon is kind of a test for whether or not you have good clean water. It's kind of like the coal miners have with the birds down in the caves and in the wells on it. So we have we're supporting the pesticide reporting, but we want to certainly have you go one step further, and that is to more identify it down to section levels instead of just a watershed. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Mr. Kosasen.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. Richard Kosasen, the Oregon Sheep Growers Association. And I'm here today with a very novel idea and a novel request. We would like the committee to strongly consider augmenting the funding for the Wildlife Services Program through the Department of Ag. And the reasons are pretty simple. We have, in terms of sheep production, across the state of Oregon, we have probably 3,500 to 3,600 producers. And these range from a small farm flock operation to a very large production setting. But I can give you some recent numbers. According to the National Ag Statistics Service, in terms of predation, in recent years, the last survey in terms of a national survey was conducted in May of 2000. Producers experienced a loss of 3,300 sheep and 7,500 lambs. And according to the National Ag Statistics Service, the reports of those loss numbers probably are dramatically underreported. But the value in terms of those losses for the year 2000 were nearly $600,000. Oregon Department of Ag in the late, well, I guess it was 97-98, conducted a very thorough survey in conjunction with the Oregon Ag Statistics Service. Their findings were, I think, more dramatic. They, in completion of that survey, described crop losses and livestock losses as a result of predation in the state of Oregon at $147 million. $6 million
was spent by ag producers in terms of prevention measures. The numbers are fairly staggering. If we look at the budget projections for 2003 and 2005, the dollars flowing through the Department of Ag for Wildlife Services are estimated about $419,000 for the biennium. And if we go back to the 99-01 biennium, the number starting out that period was right at $450,000. So in actual dollars, absent of any consideration for inflationary increases, we're looking at a fairly significant reduction in those dollars. It should be noted that dollars flow to Wildlife Services also through the Department of Fish and Wildlife for 03-05. Those are estimated about $210,000. The significance of the program, however, is that it is a cooperatively funded program. You have dollars flowing from the federal government, the state through ODA and ODF&W, counties, and even private citizens who participate in the Wildlife Services program. So if you continue to decrease the Wildlife Services funding, what we do is we put more pressure specifically on private individuals as well as county governing bodies, which is increasingly a problem. It's not, and I think it should be noted, that the program is not simply for livestock production, but if you look at the Wildlife Services program in terms of taking care of predators or animals at airports, neighborhoods in terms of domestic pets, it serves a wide array of Oregonians. I think it's a very sound program, and I think very worthwhile additional funding, if available. And with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nelson.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to make a short statement on behalf of the Department of Agriculture's budget. My name is Dave Nelson. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Oregon Seed Council. It's the grass seed farmers of the state of Oregon. I also represent the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association in Oregon. Those are the number 3 and 4 ranked agricultural enterprises in the state by way of economic contribution to the state. Seed industry produces seed on over 500,000 acres in the Willamette Valley, Central Oregon, Northeastern Oregon, and Union County, the value of about $330 million. We grow about 850 million pounds of seed. That's about two-thirds of the world's supply of grass seeds that are adapted to temperate climates around the world. Dairy Farmers Association, I think Tillamook, the 2-pound Tillamook cheese block is the number 1 or 2, kind of flops back and forth with Kraft's block of cheese as the largest seller in the United States, and I think that that's something that we can be pretty proud of. When I was writing these notes, I thought to myself how intertwined we are with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. In the seed industry, we work very closely with the Agricultural Development and Marketing Division. We've had programs in Hungary, Mexico, Chile, Argentina, and China. Most notably in China, we've increased exports of grass seeds from Oregon to China from 50,000 pounds in 1995 to approaching 15 million pounds in 2004. With the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, their rate of beautification of the country to host the world is on a very accelerated pace. We work very closely with the Commodity Inspection Division, the Plant Division, on phytotoxic reports to export seeds and export other commodities around the nation. The Natural Resources Division, we work cooperatively with. We pay fees to all of these departments. We pay $10 an acre to burn. If you burn 1,000 acres, that's $10,000 in fees to support the Natural Resources Division, Smoke Management, and Research Program. We match that with research contributions from the grass seed commodity commissions in the state. Probably one of the most important things we do is, and want to do, is to support the Food Safety Division in the Department of Agriculture. the six special sessions drained off the $5 million that they had accumulated in ending balance over the course of the last 20-some years. I think it's critically important to have this public-private partnership restored to a public-private partnership. I think it's very important to the dairy industry. The Northwest dairy industry is a common milk shed. Milk moves back and forth from Washington to Oregon, from Oregon to Washington and Idaho, and slops around in there. I think it's important to recognize and to know that the federal government and their food safety program, food safety law, has minimum inspection requirements that we are now at the minimum of inspections that we perform with the dairy industry to enable milk to flow between states. It would be, I think, a travesty to tell Tillamook or Three Mile Canyon Farms that they couldn't ship their milk to Vancouver or to Washington to sell it, to make cheese out of it in Yakima or back and forth that way. So we think, as you all know, agriculture, farmers as production agriculture, don't have the ability to pass these fees on to their customers, as some testimony earlier said. We just absorb them. So when the price goes down, we're eating those fees. That's why I think that the public participation in a food safety division funding program is critically important to us. Thank you.
Gentlemen, call forward Mark Simmons and Rick Gustafson. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. My name is Mark Simmons. I am the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. Pleased to be here in support of the Department of Agriculture's budget today. The nursery industry is the number one segment of agriculture in the state of Oregon, with sales of nearly $800 million a year, 80% of which are sold outside the state of Oregon, and a neighborhood of 20,000 employees and about 2,200, I believe, licensed growers, of which about 1,400 of those are members of the association. Director Koba and her staff do a marvelous job, along with the Board of Agriculture, in providing necessary services to agriculture in the state of Oregon. The plant division inspectors, in particular, and the work they have done for us identifying and eradicating new diseases that come to Oregon, particularly the sudden oak death disease that has caused some difficulty in the state. But those services are invaluable, and we would support the policy option package to make two new permanent inspectors in the plant division. The pesticide use reporting system, we would not support funding for that until the scope of reporting issue is resolved, and we would like to see that resolved in accordance with the initial intent of the legislation that enacted that in 99. We are unhappy with the erosion of general fund support for this agency. What was probably 12 years ago pushing nearly 50% general fund support is, if I am correct, down to about 15% today. Now, I know you have a lot of very difficult decisions to make, but I think that the importance of agriculture to the state of Oregon warrants additional recognition in general fund dollars and general fund budget support. We've heard some inspection programs Mr. Nelson mentioned are at their minimum. We don't want to be recognized as minimal producers or minimal doing minimal activities to ensure the quality of Oregon goods. The oversight that the ODA provides does just so much to ensure the quality and marketability and the marketplace, position in the marketplace of Oregon's nursery goods. We really couldn't do it without them. It is truly a partnership, and we want to be on record in full support of their budget. So, yeah, I'd be happy to take any questions, or we'll hand it off to Mr. Gustafson.
Mr. Gustafson.
Thank you, Chair Morgan. My name is Rick Gustafson. I'm a member of the State Board of Agriculture, and I'm here to support the department's budget. What I'd like to talk about, though, is the importance of the Ag Marketing Division of the department. You've heard a lot of recognition of the department through the various divisions. Those are really terrific. The department has been very responsive, but agriculture marketing is particularly important. I've spent a lot of time working on helping to develop new initiatives for new products and new quality products, particularly as they're traded overseas or traded out of the state, because so much of what we do in production agriculture in Oregon really depends upon markets quite a distance from Oregon. And the need for them to know about the products and the innovations and those aspects of those products in order to make sure that we have a sufficient market to absorb that production. We've got a great reputation for quality. But we have to maintain that reputation, and we have to maintain that communication. And the Ag Marketing Division has done just an absolutely incredible job of picking up all of the diverse products and great things and innovations that are done in this state and assisting us with developing those markets. And it's a testimonial to the department's ability to act as a partner with agriculture to keep them viable. The other one I'd emphasize is the certification program. Because it's demonstrated in the last 2 years how important it is for us to have the capacity to very quickly respond and provide certifications to individuals or to consumers with regard to our various products, whether it's nursery products or food products or beef products. It's essential that we have an effective certification program. It's with great pride that we can take that the department responded so quickly to those problems that we faced in our certification programs and instilled that confidence for the consumers to protect those markets. I regard the department's budget and as an investment, and the general fund is a pretty good deal for a nearly $4 billion annual industry in Oregon.
Thank you very much, and also thank you for the volunteer time that you give to the state of Oregon in serving on the Board of Agriculture. It's much appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. It has been an honor, actually, to have the opportunity to associate with members in the
agriculture. Likes it him?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
Well, there are exceptions.
I know.
We also have three letters that we received that we'd like to introduce into the public record. One is from Mark Yeager regarding the pesticide use reporting system. One is from Lana Butterfield regarding the measurement standards division. And one is from Les Hagelson regarding the use of Measure 66 and PCSRF money. So those are introduced into the public record.
Two other testimonies that were delivered to us to deliver to you.
Oh, we'd be glad to enter those in also.
From Bear Creek Corporation in Southern Oregon and producer in Klamath.
Okay, I have a letter from Bear Creek Corporation and a letter from L&M Produce, and those will also be introduced into the public record of the proceedings. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 5003 and 5004. Members, we will begin deliberations on the Parks Department next. And so I hope to see you all here at the next meeting. And with that, we will
thank you. Very generous.